We're going to start with a little word association to see whether you're awake and to see how smart you are. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some shapes, some images, and I want you just to tell me the first thought that comes to your mind when you see these geometrical shapes. Okay, you guys ready? You guys ready? Okay. Tell me what you see. Huh, I see a peace sign. You see Starbucks? I see a mermaid in a green thing. Target, interesting. Olympics, okay. Nike, all right. I just see a random shape. Isn't it interesting how quickly those things came to your mind? Every single one of you were able this morning to recognize those logos and what brand they represented. That tells me that you have seen those things thousands of times. You've seen them so many times that you have come to instantly recognize them. You don't even have to think about it. And advertisers know the power of repetition. They know that if you see something over and over again, it'll start to get implanted in your mind so that it'll become subconscious. You won't even have to think about it. It also tells us about the power of images. These things here I intentionally chose not to have any letters. I could have put McDonald's up there, but it was an M. You could have said, well, that, you know, gives it away. There was no letters. There was no words whatsoever. All it was an image. And yet you instantly knew what brand or what product that image represented. Repetition and images are incredibly powerful. Advertisers know this, and God knew this a long time before them. It is significant, I think, that God told us in the second commandment that we aren't to make any graven images and to bow down and worship them, because God knows that there's a very close connection between our eyes and our heart. We have, as human beings, the tendencies to worship those things that we see. So if something is constantly put before our eyes, we will have the tendency to bow down before it. And today I want to talk about something that has been repeatedly put before our eyes that perhaps is not the healthiest image, or at least not a biblical image. I think we've all been kind of shaped by it, and Jesus today is giving his disciples an image to replace it. He's taking the faulty image that we have captured from the world, and he's giving us a new image that he wants us to look at. That image is first stated in Mark chapter 10, verse 33, the chapter that was just read for us. In verse 33, Jesus says to his disciples, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise." Jesus tells his disciples what is going to happen when he gets to Jerusalem. If you've been following along with us, if you've been reading the Gospel of Mark, you may be wondering right now, hasn't Jesus already told them that? Don't they already know what's going to happen? If you, I'll prove it to you, I'll show you. Jesus has told them now 3 times exactly what is going to happen to him when he arrives in Jerusalem. In Mark chapter 8, he tells them that he's going to suffer many things. He's going to be killed, and after 3 days, he's going to rise again. In Mark chapter 9, he tells them he's going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise. And then now in the next chapter, in Mark chapter 10, he tells them basically the same thing again. He's going to be killed, and after 3 days, he's going to rise. Here he adds a few more details about the kind of suffering, about the kind of shame that he's going to be experiencing there when he gets into Jerusalem. But the basic message is still the same. That's because Jesus knows that he's got to repeat it over and over again. The disciples need to keep hearing it so that it becomes embedded in their minds and hopefully eventually gets to their hearts. But you know they haven't really heard Jesus yet. You know that they haven't quite got the message by their response to what Jesus says to them. Immediately after he tells them this, James and John come up to Jesus. They say, "Jesus, we want you to do for us whatever we ask you." And it says in verse 37, they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." Jesus has just said he's going to Jerusalem to suffer this terrible disgrace. And they come up to Jesus and they say, "When you enter into your glory, let us sit one at your right and one at your left." See, when Jesus was talking to them, all they heard was, "I am going to Jerusalem." They didn't hear the rest of what Jesus said. They knew that when Jesus got to Jerusalem, at least they thought, that Jesus was going to be crowned with glory. They pictured Jesus going into Herod's palace, where Pilate was currently residing, and sitting there on Herod's throne. They pictured those two thrones behind the throne, one at his right and one at his left, the places of second and third power in the kingdom. And they were saying, "Jesus, when you sit on that throne in the palace in Jerusalem, we want to sit on the throne on your right and on the throne on your left." It didn't matter what else Jesus had said. They had this image in their mind. It had been embedded there and it was in their hearts, and that was all that they could picture. We have these same images of power and of honor. Even though we don't have a monarchy, it's interesting that when the president delivers the State of the Union address, he is there, and then on his right is the vice president, on his left is the Speaker of the House, the second and third positions of power. We have maintained this sort of imagery of people who are honored. Mostly, we maintain it in our Olympic Games. It's coming up this summer, in just a few months in Brazil. And you know that at the end of every single competition, there is a podium, and on that podium, the highest position, the place of greatest honor, goes to the champion, the first place gold medal winner. The place on his right goes to the silver medal winner, and the place on his left goes to the bronze medal winner. These are the people that we honor. This is our image of honor, not only in Jesus' day, but in our day as well. And we have sort of absorbed that into our own thinking and even in our own hearts. When we think of the person who is honored, a certain image comes to our mind. We think of someone who is successful, someone who is popular, someone who is powerful. When we go into a room, we can kind of come up with an idea of the people who should be honored and then the people who haven't quite achieved the same level of success in their life and perhaps don't deserve the same kind of honor. And when we come into the presence of what we consider honor or someone deserving of honor, we sort of have a tendency to bow before them. We don't maybe physically bow, but at least in our hearts we pay respect to the people that we think deserve honor. And we all have an idea of who those people are. The disciples had an idea of what honor looked like, of the kind of person that was honored. And Jesus is going to give them some corrections to that image that they have in their mind. When they ask if they can sit at Jesus' right and at their left, Jesus kind of asks questions that are saying, "Did you really hear what I just said to you?" It says in verse 38, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" These images of a cup and of baptism are really violent images taken from the Old Testament. They are images of great suffering. There is a sense of the cup, the image of the cup is being full of God's wrath. And the person that drinks the cup experiences the wrath of God. A cup is a metaphor for suffering that someone goes through at the hand of God. And Jesus is saying to the disciples, are you going to drink the cup that I drink? Are you going to be baptized? Are you going to be immersed in the suffering that I am about to go through? Jesus is saying to them, do you realize that when I get to Jerusalem, I am going to suffer? I'm not going to sit on the throne in the way you think I'm going to sit on it. It is going to be incredibly difficult. Do you understand that this is what you're going through? And they say, yeah, we understand. We can take it. We can drink that drink. We can be baptized with that baptism. Because they still have that same image of glory in their heads. What they hear Jesus saying is, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But in the end, there's still going to be this glory and this honor. That's what they hear in their minds. And so Jesus has to correct them again and let them know that their image of glory, their image of honor, comes from a source that they may not necessarily be proud of. In verse 42, Jesus says, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them." Jesus refers to the Roman leaders, the people who were in power in the Roman political system. So particularly like the emperor or the kings or the governors, the people who would have their images placed on coins, the people who would exercise power and dominion and force in order to get people to respect and obey them. Jesus is saying that the world uses power to get people to honor them. Instead of earning it, they force people to give them their honor and their respect. And Jesus is saying that the disciples have got their image of honor from the same, from these Gentile pagan rulers rather than from God himself. And I think the same is true of us. Our image of honor comes a lot more from our culture, from our world, than it does from the Bible. Let me just give you one example that I think sort of shows this. Is there anyone here who knows what this symbol is? Anybody? So you immediately recognized the Olympic symbol. This is the symbol for the Paralympics. The Olympics for people with disabilities that happens immediately after what we call the Olympics. This Paralympics doesn't get nearly as much coverage, doesn't get nearly as much money. It's not going to be on prime time or even network television. And we have no idea that it even exists because we exalt, we honor the same things that the world honors. We honor power and success and popularity. That's our image of the person that needs to be honored, and we all have that same sort of image. And I think the best place where the world's view of honor and power and God's view or the biblical view of honor and power come together was one year, about 20 years ago, at the National Prayer Breakfast. There at the prayer breakfast, President Bill Clinton was sitting on the right, Vice President Al Gore was sitting at the left, and the speaker that day, standing at the podium, was a nun who was so short that she couldn't even see over the podium. The camera could only capture part of her face because it was being blocked by the microphones in front of her. The nun was Mother Teresa. And that day she got up and she spoke truth to power. This tiny little nun spoke about abortion and about how that abortion was giving mothers the right to kill their children and make that decision. And she was saying, how could a nation that celebrates this, that allows this, tell anyone else that killing is wrong? She spoke some very powerful words, words that were probably very uncomfortable for people to hear that day. And after Mother Teresa spoke, Bill Clinton was supposed to get up and give some words, and it was visibly awkward as he got up. And he said some of the wisest words he's probably ever said. He said, it's difficult to argue with a life so well lived. In our culture, we celebrate power and popularity. And in that room, we would say the people that should be honored are people like the commander-in-chief, the ruler, the leader of the free world, the president, Bill Clinton. But instead, it became very apparent by the end, the person with the greatest honor was a nun who had given her life to serve the poorest of the poor in one of the most destitute places on earth. Jesus is saying our image of honor and of power should not come from the world, but it should come from the Word of God. And he gives us a very clear picture of what the person who God honors looks like. In verse 48, we read, even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus is saying, even me, the person who has the most glory, who has the most reason to be respected and to be worshiped, even myself, as I have come into the world as my mission, not to have people do things for me, but to come and ask, what can I do for you? Jesus lived a life of service. And his life ended in the ultimate act of service on the cross, giving himself for others. Jesus says, who does God honor? What kind of person does God celebrate? God celebrates the person who willingly endures shame on behalf of others. Jesus' moment of greatest glory, the climax of Jesus' life, was when he was on the cross bearing our sins on his own body. Remember how James and John said, when you are in your glory, let us sit on your right or on your left? They pictured Jesus sitting on a throne in the palace being celebrated. When Jesus was in the palace, he was being mocked. They put a purple robe on him and a crown of thorns on him. They whipped him, and that's where they spit on him and beat him when he was there in that palace. And then they led him out to the cross. And when he was hanged on the cross, Mark tells us in chapter 15, verse 27, with him they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on his left. When James and John were asking to sit at his right and his left in Jesus' glory, what they ultimately were asking for was that they would be crucified with Jesus. That is not the image that they had in their mind. But Jesus wants, by repetition, by giving us this image, for this to be the image of glory for us. The image of honor is Jesus on the cross, bearing our sin, bearing our shame on our behalf. Jesus says that is the kind of person that God honors. And as we begin to put this image of Jesus on the cross before our minds, as we begin to see that that is the kind of person that God honors, our attitudes and our actions begin to change. Jesus says in verse 43, It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. Jesus says, if you're a follower of me and you want to be honored by God, you don't do it by pursuing power and popularity and wealth. Instead, you do it by serving everybody. If you want to be honored by God, you don't try to achieve as much as you can in life and get other people to look up to you. Instead, you bow down to everyone. And you become their servant. You become a slave of all. Jesus honors those who willingly bear shame on behalf of others. When someone with this mindset walks into a room, they don't look around to figure out who has the most power and prestige in the room and show respect to them. Instead, they pay attention to the servers. They look and see if there's anything they can do to serve them. When people who are servants, who have this servant attitude that Jesus is talking about, when they show up at a party, they don't rank people according to their status and make decisions about who they should serve and who should serve them. Instead, they look at everyone and they say, "What can I do for you? I am at your service." There's a tradition in the Vatican that on Maundy Thursday, the day before Good Friday, that the Pope washes the feet of 12 people, just like Jesus did the night before he was crucified. And typically, the Pope chooses 12 priests whose feet he is going to wash. But Pope Francis, being the nonconformist that he is, has changed the tradition. Instead of choosing priests, what he did is first year in the Vatican, he went to a juvenile detention center and he chose 12 young inmates to have them sit before him, to take off their shoes, to wash and to kiss their feet. When Pope Francis did this, he spoke to those youth and he said, "This is a symbol, it is a sign. Washing your feet means I am at your service." This is what Jesus teaches us. This is what I do, and I do it with my heart. I do this with my heart because it is my duty as a priest and bishop. I must be at your service. You can say, well, that's a ceremony. There were cameras there. He had that all planned out. But if you've watched him at all, you might acknowledge that he is doing this from the heart. He has a way of noticing those who are the least in society, and he's attracted to them, and he is truly there, as far as we can tell, to serve them. Someone who's been touched by the ministry of Jesus Christ, someone who realizes that God honors those who willingly endure shame for others, says to the entire world, "I am at your service." Often when stories about embarrassing things that have happened to us come up, I tell a story about when I was first a server at a restaurant. I had been given this job and I didn't have any experience. It was a new restaurant opening up and they were really desperate for help. And so they hired me to serve there. And before they opened the restaurant, they did a trial night where we were able to invite family in, and then they also invited people who worked on the restaurant and people who were suppliers for the restaurant to come in and to enjoy a free meal so that we could just practice and we could see if the restaurant was actually going to work, if we could actually serve people. And so this was a practice night for all of us. And I was delivering food to different tables. And at one point, I was given two appetizers. And I was told to deliver them to a particular table. One hand, I don't remember what I had, some appetizer. The other hand, remember very clearly, was barbecue-covered chicken wings. And I carried these out in my two hands to the table. I reach onto the table to put down the one appetizer, and as I'm doing that, I forget that in my other hand, I'm holding barbecue-covered chicken wings, and they begin to roll off the tray directly onto the lightly colored slacks of a fine-looking gentleman sitting there at the table. I look down, and I see his pants covered in barbecue sauce, and I am horrified. I am completely ashamed at what I have done. And I would have been even more ashamed if I knew what I found out the next day. This guy was one of the vice presidents at Sysco Foods. This was a powerful, important, prestigious man, and I had just dumped barbecue chicken wings on his lap. I was so embarrassed. And in one sense, this could not have been a worse person to have done that to. In another sense, it couldn't have been a better person. His immediate reaction was, oh, don't worry about it. He literally said, no harm, no foul, it's fine, don't worry, this is fine, we'll get it cleaned up. And he went on and he enjoyed his meal. The guy was so forgiving. The guy was so gracious. And whenever I talk about embarrassing moments, whenever I talk about being a server, I tell the story about this man, and I honor and I praise this man's name. I don't know if he was a Christian. I don't know where he stands with Christ, but I do know that in that moment, he behaved more like Jesus Christ than most of us Christ followers do in our life. His attitude was so forgiving. He was willing, instead of yelling at me, instead of making me feel worse for what I had done, to endure the shame himself and to extend grace to me. That's what servants do. They realize that God honors people who willingly endure shame on behalf of others. Mark tells a story in chapter 14 about a woman who busts into a dinner party that Jesus is at with his disciples. And she bows down at Jesus' feet and she washes his feet with expensive ointment and with her own hair. What an embarrassing low moment. But Jesus said she was doing it to honor him. And in chapter 14, verse 9, he says, truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. She was enduring shame on behalf of Jesus Christ. And that's what we are doing when we are serving the least of these, when we are serving people who the world doesn't think deserves any honor, when we are going up to them and saying, I'm at your service, what can I do for you? Ultimately, we are serving Jesus Christ himself. And all of us right now are walking toward a heavenly Jerusalem. We are following Jesus on a road that ultimately leads to the new Jerusalem, where we will worship day and night. It says in Revelation chapter 5, a lamb who looks as though he has been slain. He is the image that is put before our eyes every single day. Jesus Christ bearing the marks of his crucifixion. He will be the center of our worship in that new Jerusalem. And at his right and at his left are going to be people who walked in the footsteps of Jesus and willingly endured shame on behalf of others. People like this woman who washed Jesus' feet with the expensive ointment. People like Simon who carried Jesus' cross as he went to be crucified. People like Joseph of Arimathea, who was willing to risk his life in order to take the body of Jesus down off the cross and give him a proper burial fit for a king. And it will be millions and millions of people that we have never heard of, that the world doesn't even acknowledge, who have given their lives in acts of service on behalf of others in the name of Jesus Christ. This truly is the most recognized logo in the entire world, the cross, a symbol of execution, something that people wouldn't talk about in polite company while it was being used, and something that didn't become a symbol for Christianity until centuries after it was being used as a symbol of execution, as a means of execution. The cross is our symbol, a symbol of death, and a reminder to us that Jesus, when he calls us to follow him, calls us to die to ourselves, our own prestige, our own honor, and instead to honor Jesus Christ who died for us. To remember that it is the people who willingly endure shame on behalf of others that God honors. To follow in his footsteps of being a servant of all for his glory and for his honor. By God's grace, we will do it.